You're listening to Radio Influence.
This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Here are your hosts, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and your color commentator, Casey Oxendine.
Welcome to the Valor Hour. I'm looking into everything Valor Fights, as well as the headlines from combat sports across the world. Thanks for joining us, and remember, subscribe on Apple Podcasts as well as Stitcher. Also, a huge thanks to our tremendous sponsor, Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl, for supporting our cause each and every week. This week, it's the official Valor Fights 49 Fight Night at the Shed event recap, a big panel discussion segment, plus this week in national news, and as always, Valor Fights President Tim Loy will address your questions during the Valor Hour Q&A segment. I'm Casey Oxendine, and I am joined by the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. Tim, the Shed is out of the way, and we've got a big summer lineup headed our way.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. That was as anticipated. It was a great venue, great time, good vibe, great crowd, and everybody was really into it the whole time. And we'll be back to the Shed in August 17th. So we'll be doing two shows there this year.
Well, we are also joined this evening by a couple of our mainstays here at the Valor Hour. Of course, it's Master Cutman Mark Laws and Big Sexy Billy Swanson. How are you gentlemen doing tonight?
Doing fantastic, brother. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, so again, as I mentioned before, let's go ahead and get right on into the news. It was a big night of action last Saturday night as Valor Fights 49 Fight Night at the Shed went down live from the Shed there in Maryville, Tennessee. Every kind of finish you can imagine, tons of wars, great fights, Tim.
Yeah, it really was. And as we talked about going into it, these are the kind of cards that'll kind of creep up on you because they don't get as much attention as some of your big pro cards. But, you know, I had a feeling it was going to deliver, and it did. We got, like you said, you know, some good submissions, some knockouts, some very close controversial decisions. And, you know, it had a little bit of everything.
Well, let's go ahead and dive right on into it. And, of course, this first matchup, it was par for the course as well. It was bout number one presented by Thunder Roads Magazine. And it was Junior's Muay Thai to catch weight 140 pounds. Levi Giese taking on Caleb Spangler. And it was Levi Giese with the third round TKO, but it did not come easy. Caleb Spangler really bringing it on and kind of cooling off there in the third. Tim, talk about it.
Man, it was a really good way to get us started. Two great teams going head-to-head. It was American Killer Bees and Shield Systems there. And, you know, the kid from Shield Systems, Spangler, I mean, he was put together. You know, he looked like a little man. You know, he was definitely in very good shape to be 17 years old and pretty well developed there. David Robbins' kid from Killer Bees, Levi, he was taller and lankier and still didn't have that, you know, man look about him yet. But man, he really brought it. And the first round was really close. You know, it seemed like Spangler may have took that first round. It was close. Levi started to come alive there after he got hit a few times. You know, David had told me he was afraid he would freeze up in there once he started getting hit. And he actually did the opposite, and he really came alive in the second, third rounds. And ended up getting a stoppage in the third round. Maybe I could have, wouldn't have disappointed me to have seen maybe a standing eight count a couple times there where Spangler was pretty wobbly, you know, but it was still a great showing from both guys, good accounting for both guys. And I think for it to be their debuts, they will both, you know, take this and run with it. And, you know, both those guys are already 17, so it shouldn't be too much longer until we start seeing those guys doing MMA, I would think.
Billy, this is Giese was your teammate, man, and I'm sure that you've seen him. You've watched him sort of grow and mature into what we saw last Saturday night. Talk about his training a little bit and about the fight itself.
Definitely loved watching Levi get that TKO. I kind of came up with his nickname after the fight. I'm now calling him Levi Lead Hands Giese. He was definitely the lead. The 1-2s were landing that night. But No, I mean, Levi's a hardworking kid. Like, I mean, the whole family, there's like him and his brothers. There's four brothers, and I believe they have two older sisters. But just like the whole group of them, like, it's awesome to see and have that whole family in the gym, because all four boys, you know, the youngest two are like, I think, like 5 and like 8. And then like Levi has a younger brother, Royal, who's 15. But like all four of them, man, hard workers. They're very talented kids, very well mannered. And I mean, I think honestly, like at some point, you will see each one of them inside the cage getting their hand raised.
Nice. Well, again, great fight and huge congrats to Geese on finishing out strong. Moving on to bout number two, this one was presented by Baldwin Cremation and Mortuary, and it was also Junior's Muay Thai at a catch weight of 140 pounds. CJ Wimberly taking on Zach Hammock. Zach Hammock comes out with unanimous decision victory. He advances to 3-0. He looks spectacular coming out of this one, Tim.
He was nonstop, pedal to the metal all the way in this one. You know, the last time out, he started a little bit slower and came on towards the end, but this time he was full steam ahead from round one all the way through. CJ Wimberly was right there with him. You know, the first round, he was trading shot for shot and, you know, keeping the pace there, but was giving up some reach and some length and, you know, just, like I said, was in the fight the whole time. He started to slow down in the second, third rounds, where Hammock was able to just kind of keep that pace, but you know, not a bad showing at all from Wimberly. Looked good. And Hammock now 3-0. And I think who wouldn't want to see Hammock and Geese next, you know?
Yeah, undoubtedly. And, you know, something that really stood out is, but it really in both of these youth matches is that they expend tons and tons of energy. And you're like, well, you got to conserve your energy, but they don't. And they go 3 rounds strong every single time. So the person that really gets off the most and you know, asserts himself and lands more is the one that's going to win. You know, it's almost like a numbers game. And Zach Hammock, he had a lot of reach out there, and he was just, you know, nonstop. He just kept on pushing. Mark, you caught this fight. What was your take on Zach Hammock and his victory over CJ Wimberly?
Man, I was just truly blown away by the level of skill these juniors are bringing in. I mean, to be 17 years old and be that put together, and especially to be 3-0 like Hammock is. I mean, you know, Wimberly had a great showing. I don't think he lost any stock in the fight. It was slightly outclassed. He started to gas a little bit, but man, what a bright future for both these kids. And I'm with Tim. You know, I think Geese Hammock is the fight to make.
Yeah, for sure. Well, moving on, the main card kicked off at 7 p.m. With bout number 3 presented by Thunder Roads Magazine. It was amateur Muay Thai in the middleweight division and featured Caleb Frank taking on Greg Hook. Frank ends up with a unanimous decision victory, but Greg Hook, Tim, he hung in there.
Yeah, that's one that we added. You know, the listeners were keeping up with picks and whatnot last week, and we'll go over our pick standings here at the end. We added this one at the very last minute, and you know, Caleb Frank's a guy that had debuted just a few weeks earlier on Strikefest with D3 and Dustin Long and those guys, and he'd won a decision over Lee Polk. So he jumps in here with Greg Cook. Not a lot known about Greg Cook coming into this one, besides he was a local to Maryville. He's independent in this one, but I had seen by, you know, perusing his Facebook that he had a 4-stripe white belt, you know, so he'd been training some at some point, so we just didn't really know what to expect. And, you know, at weigh-ins, we saw that he was a tall, long, lengthy guy, and just kind of a different character. You know, he's a really kind of hard guy to get a read on, and his fighting style was equally so, just very awkward, and not knocking it because you know, a lot of people probably thought he was going to go in there and get waxed in the first round, but he went all the rounds, and Caleb Frank definitively won the decision, but he never got him out, and if I'm not mistaken, he never dropped him.
No, and it's strange. Greg Cook, he absorbed a lot of punishment, almost like a zombie.
Yeah,
it's strange to say, but really
weird, awkward angles. And you know, props to Caleb Frank because he didn't let himself get drawn into any craziness. Really, he stayed very composed, very tight, just did his work, and decisively won all the rounds. You know, but I'd say a lot of people probably expected him to get him out of there.
Yeah. Mark, you know Caleb pretty well. Talk about his performance there and what do you want to see next out of him?
Sure do, man. That's one of my training partners, Caleb Frank, and man, it was mixed emotions going into that fight. You know, it was a last-minute take on fight, fighting outdoors. There's a lot of variables, and included in that variable is Greg Cook. He's his own variable, you know. You never know what to expect from him, and, man, he came out there, and he took a beating, for sure. But, man, he never went down. He never backed up. He was steady going forward. And I mean, a lot of those kicks he took and a lot of those punches he took would damn near kill another man. Absolutely. So nothing but props to that guy, man. He wore one for sure, but he never went down.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, moving on to bout number four. That was presented by Miller Lite, and it was the first mixed martial arts bout of the evening at a catch weight of 150 pounds. It was Timothy Curitan taking on Chris Courtner. Curitan gets the round one submission over the more veteran, if you will, Chris Courtner. Tim, talk about the matchup.
Yeah, you know, this is one where we didn't know what to expect. We knew that it would be a good one to lead off the main card with because, Courtner is always going to – he's going to go in and he's going to, go out on his shield if he's going to go out. He's not going to – he's not in boring fights. And his last one, he'd won it with a knockout, you know. So he comes in against an unknown in Curitan, but we knew training with C.J. Hamilton and those guys at Contemporary Martial Arts out of Hartwell, Georgia, that he would be a skilled and a guy and come ready. And, he looked really good. He's tall, he's lanky, and at the weight, he's going to be a handful for a lot of guys. There was it was pretty much a mad scramble the whole time until he locked up a standing guillotine and, props to Courtner fought it off for a while. Fought it off for, I would say a good 30, 40 seconds. And finally just couldn't fight it anymore. And Curitan gets a win in his debut. Congrats to him. Courtner drops to 1-3. And talking to him yesterday, I believe he'll be moving down to 135.
Yeah, and, Curitan, I mean, props to him, too, for holding on to the guillotine. A lot of times people go after submission, they see that it's not maybe panning out, and then they move on to something else. He persevered in that position and ended up getting it, and so it's a testament to his patience and so forth. Big Sexy, what was your thought on this fight?
I thought it was a great showcase of grappling skill. Both guys, like Tim said, were, pretty even, and it could have been a toss-up, like I said, great showcase of grappling skill in it, and then getting the guillotine finish.
Well, moving on to bout number five. Bout number five, it was presented by OEB Law, and it was mixed martial arts in the heavyweight division. Chris Devine taking on Cal Gill, KMAA prospect. It's Cal Gill who gets the round one TKO, but a little bit of a scrap there, Tim.
Yeah, both guys had their moments. They came out throwing heat immediately. There was no, feeling out process. And the way they came out, I knew that we weren't going to get three rounds. I'm not sure if he slipped or if he dropped him, but it looked like Devine had dropped Gill and was going to maybe, finish him off early. But Cal Gill weathers the storm, makes his way back to his feet and ends up dropping Devine and then pouring on the heavy shots from the top and finally gets the stoppage. So Cal Gill with KMA gets a win. It'd be interesting to see if he stays out there actively. I see he's not a young buck. He's already a little bit long in the tooth as far as your amateurs go. But I'd love to see him competing. And then of course, Devine out of the Morristown area there with Lance Abbott. I'm sure he'll be back as well. He didn't have a bad showing either.
Yeah. Now, Billy, I'm going to go back to you here. I mean, these are heavyweights, and of course, you are the current Valor Fights heavyweight champion, looking for that pro switch. But what's your take on these big guys? These are two big guys, kind of on the rise.
Man, it was a typical showcase of heavyweights and one hit power. Like Tim said, both guys came out the gate, and Devine out the gate was landing some solid shots. It did look like he dropped Cal, and then Cal weathered the storm, dropped Devine, and then ended up getting the finish from top. So, perseverance won that fight.
Yeah, and I'll say this, man, and you know this, that when you're in a heavyweight contest, the guy who ends up on top has a noted advantage. Even if you've got jiu-jitsu and everything else, man, when you've got a lot of weight and you have to carry another man's weight, that's a long or a tall test.
That's why Billy stays on top, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Moving on to bout number six, presented by Old Smoky Moonshine. This was back to advanced Muay Thai in the lightweight division. Riley Klinger out of Team NKI taking on Steven Tanner out of Bowman's Kickboxing. Tanner gets the unanimous decision, but this was a heck of a scrap. These guys both came to fight.
Yeah, I may defer to you a little bit on this one. I was in the midst of an issue during this fight, and I know it was good. I heard the crowd going crazy. I talked to Greg McMahon afterward. He said it was very close. It was a war, and I got to skim through the video, and I could see that it was a closely contested fight. But Tanner obviously gets the win and gets up to 3-2 now.
Yeah, it was close, and you know, Klinger, Klinger and Tanner had very different styles. You know, Klinger, to me, looking back, you know, was a little more based with his hands, and also looked good inside the clinch too. Was very active in close, but Steven Tanner was really good at putting his hands and his feet together in combination. So you'd see him start with punches into kicking combination, and right back into punches in the same combination, you know, in the same stride. So I think that, you know, Tanner stayed a little bit ahead of him throughout the whole fight, but all in all, it was a very exciting fight to watch and again, closely contested. Mark, what was your take on it?
I think Tanner really pushed the pace. I think he kept things at the distance he was comfortable with. I think he landed the more effective strikes for sure. I had him winning all three rounds, but I mean, nothing to be held back from, the other guy either. I mean, it was a great fight, but Tanner was just too much.
Yeah, of course, Tanner moves on to big things, man. I think he's one to be watching for in 2018. Moving on to bout number seven, presented by Frankie's Body Shop. It was female mixed martial arts in the bantamweight division, and it was Winona Daniel taking on KMAA prospect Morgan Hickam. And Hickam takes it round one TKO. It appeared as though Hickam landed a body shot of some sort, but early, and Daniel was kind of, you know, on wobbly wheels, and then Hickam just took over, Tim.
Yeah, you know, Morgan is a very tall and long bantamweight. You know, she's an imposing figure in there, but she dropped Winona early. Winona's able to get up. At some point during all this scrambling, there was a knee injury, I believe, to Winona. Okay. Something that she had already had dealt with and had surgery and whatnot. And so at that point, she got backed up against the cage. And if you watch the video, you'll see her essentially try to start standing on one leg. Yeah. And at that point, Morgan starts really pouring it on there as she landed a knee to the body. And I don't know if that was exactly what caused, you know, the end of the fight exactly. But I think that it was at that point that Winona realized that she just wasn't going to be able to defend herself on one leg under that assault. And so, you know, hopefully she gets healed back up from that. And congrats to Morgan Hickam. Gets her first win in the Valor cage, and really excited to see where she goes from here.
Yeah, definitely a tough couple of girls there. Mark, your thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, it was definitely her knee that went out, and she, as soon as I got in the cage, she was screaming that she had already had a meniscus problem on that knee as well. I'm not sure how bad the knee to the body was to lead up to that, but the definite end of the fight was definitely caused by the fact that her knee had just given out. She couldn't flex. She couldn't move. And like Tim said, she was standing on one foot at one point trying to keep it on. But, man, Hickman looked good.
Yeah, man. And, of course, she moves on 2-0, so doing big things. The mother of three, great story as well for Morgan Hickman. But moving on, bout number eight, it was presented by Baldwin Cremation and Mortuary, and it was mixed martial arts in the lightweight division. Cody Sprague out of Ishin Jiu-Jitsu taking on Logan Crowley, the independent out of Oneida. And, of course, Logan Crowley, he gets round one TKO. Tim, he's not performing like an independent.
No. If you haven't noticed, Logan Crowley's like my new favorite guy on the scene. That's like, I've taken a shine to him, you know, because he's a real good dude, first of all, and he's in very exciting fights. I don't like that he cut the mullet off. He's just another ginger in the crowd, you know, with that mullet, you know, we can pick you out real quick. But that said, he didn't lose anything. No power, I guess, was stored in the mullet.
No, he's not the Samson of mixed martial arts.
You know, Cody Sprague is, you know, Cody Sprague, I mean, when you see him, I mean, he is a pretty big, like, shredded up 155, and he's game as hell. And you know, they traded in the pocket. He dropped Cody early, pounced on top of him. Cody tried to get a triangle going, and as soon as, you know, he kind of passed the shoulder there, Logan picks him up and power bombs him out of it. Sprague stands up, and then he's dropped again and eventually knocked out on the ground. Crowley, with showing some versatility, getting a submission in his first win, a knockout in his second win. And, you know, we're all just saying, like, what if this guy was with, like, a good, solid, like, not knocking on his training now or his training partners now at all. I don't want it to come across as that. But just imagining the potential, I'm sure everyone can see.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Big Sexy, talk about this fight a little bit, man. Logan Crowley, he's kind of making a name for himself early.
No, the guy has definitely came out from, you know, way in left field, and definitely had a couple of knockout of the parks. I thought he was going to be able to get the win in the picks, and I mean, he definitely showed that. Like Tim said, he's multi-capable. He's able to get a submission or a knockout. So, I mean, the guy's kind of dangerous anywhere you put him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, great fight. And, again, Logan Crowley moves on to do big things here in Valor Fights. Bout number 9, presented by Thunder Roads Magazine, mixed martial arts in the welterweight division. It was Trevor Peak taking on Tevin Brown. Of course, Tevin Brown right there out of King's Muay Thai in Knoxville. And what a fight, man. Perhaps the best fight all night long, man. Action-packed, Tim.
You got the hardware that said it was the best fight of the night. Yeah. It was definitely good. It was awesome. It was kind of one of those fights where, you know, you had Peak, who did pretty much what everybody knew he was going to do, come in there and throw bombs and be game the whole time. And Tevin Brown certainly landing good strikes of his own, but mixing things up with takedowns, started to slow down in the third round, and it got kind of like, is Pete going to get him out of here? Because he really came on strong late. Ended up being a split decision, fight of the night. They give it to Tevin Brown, but both guys' stock rises. A good test for Tevin Brown that he passes. And Trevor Peak, like I said, he doesn't lose anything with that one. He showed that he was very game, very tough against a top prospect.
Yeah, Trevor Peak, he was really disappointed when they made the announcement, you know, just because I think he believed that he won. And, you know, it could be argued that the more significant strikes in some of the rounds would lead towards Trevor Peak. Tevin Brown, he, like you mentioned, he was a little more well-rounded. Like, in other words, he was landing some shots on the feet, but he was also getting the takedown and getting some riding time. And I think, you know, that kind of goes into, you know, the criteria. Where do you score the most, you know, in it's an artistic expression. It's something that we're actually going to talk about later in the evening. So talk about Mark, talk about this fight, man. Fight of the night and what a fight it was.
Oh, definitely fight of the night. Tevin Brown looked incredible. He stayed posed and composed in there, and, you know, take nothing away from Trevor Peak, man. He fought his ass off. And I thought most of the significant strikes that were landed during the entire fight were landed by Trevor Peak. And, man, that kid's a stud, dude. I mean, any lesser opponent, he gets them out of there. But what a testament to Tevin Brown. He's a savage, man. And everybody knew he was a savage going in, but he did nothing but rectify his situation for sure.
Well, like I said before, Tevin looks like a completely different person than when we watched him in 2017, you know, dropping down in the welterweight division. He's much more lean. He moves better. His cardio's in much better shape. So just an all-around better product at the welterweight division. So excited to see what comes up for him next. Moving on to the main card, the final four fights. Bout number 10 presented by Old Smoky Moonshine, mixed martial arts in the bantamweight division. Randall Austin taking on Javier Carbajal. Carbajal gets the unanimous decision victory. And another one that was a fight from start to finish, Tim.
Yeah, it was. It was one of those that was, it was very exciting because, I mean, you kind of knew from the first round on, like, what the battle was going to be. You know, Carbajal was going to go for takedowns. There was no doubt about it. Randall preferred to keep things standing and was getting the better of the striking exchanges. Just couldn't fend off the takedowns. Maybe overcommitted a few times, left himself open to a very good wrestler. Not a lot of damage done from the top from Carbajal. That we have several stand-ups from inactivity. So we ended up getting, you know, that age-old question, you know, is it, you know, would you tip the hand to the guy that had the better positioning throughout the fight for a longer amount of time versus the guy that was, you know, trying to do damage and which is, you know, we'll get into that later, but still a good show for both guys. You know, Carbajal did what he wanted to do and was able to execute his game plan, and it worked out for him. Austin did not have a bad showing at all. His striking was crisp, just wasn't able to stay off of his back long enough.
Yeah, and, you know, again, you know, of course, you know, props to Javier and to Scott, his coach. You know, I always tons and tons of respect. And, you know, when Randall took that fight, he knew that this was a two-time All-American wrestler. And that's the challenge that he wanted. And talking to Randall now, he wasn't down at all. He was just excited that, you know, that he felt like that, you know, although that Javier got him down, that he had a hard time keeping him down, you know. And that was something that in the camp we worked a ton on, is that when he was on his back, those feet never stopped moving, you know, trying to cause as much damage from his back, you know, up kicks and so forth. Because a lot of times guys will lay there, you know, the guy's standing over top of him and they'll lay there with their feet there. And it's like they're kind of a sitting duck for big shots. And we knew that would, you know, going in, that could be a danger spot. So, you know, he did exactly what his game plan, you know, consisted of. You know, again, he couldn't stop as many of the takedowns as I would have liked to have seen, but he still enacted the game plan, you know, as perfectly as possible. And so I'm hugely proud of him. And again, huge props to Javier for bringing such a tough fight. Billy, you were there. What are your thoughts on that fight?
My opinion is the man whose hand was raised that night was the better hugger. He was not the better fighter. I mean, given he is a two-time All-American wrestler, and I come from a wrestling background, it's probably going to piss off 90% of the wrestlers out there saying this, but it's a fight. It's not a wrestling match. I mean, if you watch the fight as far as aggression, shots landed, and even damage, I mean, if you're going to get a takedown, I mean, all he would do, he would shoot a double leg, land in guard, Randall Austin would get his feet in the pocket, push him off, up kick, he'd stand there, finally get up, and then he'd start feeding him again, and then Javier would have to take a desperation shot before he got knocked out. So, I mean, it's not a wrestling match. I mean, it's one thing to use a takedown to either work towards getting submissions or, you know, ground and pound, but to just take somebody down and hug them, I don't consider that a win. I mean, it's not a wrestling match. Like I said, it's a fight. I mean, you should be there to be trying to finish the fight, not hug your way through it.
Now, I'd like to go to Mark on this because I know he feels the other way.
I did pick Carbajal in this, and still had him winning the decision. It almost reminded me a little bit of, like, old-school primetime fights, you know, where, like, him versus Landon, where he gets the dominant amount of takedowns but isn't doing shit with the position. And, you know, Carbajal wasn't landing a lot while he was in this position, and I think that's just comes with training, comes with time. But, you know, any time that he was feeling slighted on the feet, he always had that double leg to go to and was getting takedowns at will. And, yeah, I had Carbajal winning the fight, but, I mean, it wasn't because Randall wasn't trying, you know. I mean, he was landing significant strikes on the feet, and, I mean, he was forcing him to shoot the double leg just by beating him in the face. So, yeah, I mean, both guys looked great. It was a fantastic fight.
Well, you know, we have the two contrasting thoughts on that. So, again, later this evening, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, about criteria and so forth. So we'll get into that deeper. Regardless, great fight. And, you know, both men will move on to do some big things in the organization. Moving on to bout number 11, presented by Coors Light. It was the mixed martial arts. It was the feature bout of the evening, mixed martial arts at the catch weight of 160 pounds. D3 Elite's Aaron Phillips taking on KMAA's Chase Winder. And what a battle it was. Chase Winder ends up getting the round two submission, but not without having to go through, you know, some hellfire along the way, Tim.
Yeah, it's kind of as I suspected. You know, we talked about this going into the fight. Would, you know, Winder be the more, you know, technically skilled guy versus Aaron being the bigger, more brutish, stronger guy? Winder wasn't able to get the takedowns like he wanted. And, you know, Aaron had a great first round, was looking great in the second round. I question his decision making in trying to force the fight to the ground. He worked real hard to get it. And when he finally did, it wasn't long before Winder had his back and got the choke. I think had he kept it standing, he very well could have probably got a decision.
Yeah, and one thing that really stood out to me was a little reversal there in the first round where Chase Winder was on the legs of Aaron Phillips up against the cage. Aaron reaches down and grabs what appeared to at first to be a Kimura, but he sort of had it reversed, and so he was sort of pulling that chicken wing up, and Chase Winder wasn't tapping, but he didn't want to lose that position. Finally, Chase Winder has to surrender the position, which allows Aaron Phillips to get on top, and just a very unique posture there.
And not taking anything away from Aaron, it was actually still probably his best fight.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. Mark, what was your take on it?
Well, you know, Aaron Phillips, he's very, very, very adept in the gym. Very adept in the gym. I question a little bit of his fight IQ about, you know, taking him down when he was definitely winning the stand-up, I thought, and knowing that Winder's pedigree is, you know, essentially that of submitting people. And, you know, he's fought a lot of tough guys. I mean, he fought Adam Townsend, for God's sakes, you know, I mean, back in the day. And I just felt like with Aaron's wrestling, he should have known better than to put himself in that situation. And going back to that reversal in the first round, I mean, it was picturesque, but then again, why are you on the ground with him? You know, you're winning standing up, make him stand up.
Yeah. Well, again, a good fight by both of them. And Tim, I agree with you. Aaron appears to be getting better and better. He's making little mistakes here that end up being crucial mistakes. But his overall fight IQ is continuing to improve. You know, I think in the next few fights, we're going to see a much, much better Aaron Phillips. And then, of course, huge props to Chase Winder, man, on a 2-5 win streak coming off of, you know, a good bit of time. You know, a couple years there and a little bit of ring rust. He's seemed to have shaken that out.
Moving on, 502.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to bout number 12, and of course the co-main event of the evening, presented by the Valor Hour, and it was advanced Muay Thai for the Valor Fights flyweight strap. And what a fight it was. Walter McCord out of X3 Sports, who many consider the phenom of Atlanta Muay Thai. Now at 10-0 in his amateur record, taking on Jacob Clemens, who now is at 5-1. Walter McCord with unanimous decision, but it looked like something right out of Glory, Tim.
Man, it delivered, and Walter McCord showed that it's not all hype. He's got the goods. He doesn't stop, you know. And Clemens had a great fight. You know, Clemens fought very well. It's just that the onslaught of McCord is so relentless. His pace doesn't slow. Now in the second round, Clemens essentially tried to match that pace and did a good job of matching it, arguably getting that second round. But the third round, it was just that same pace, that same unrelenting in your face pressure from McCord. And he was just it was just too many connects, you know, for Clemens, and he's so long on top of it for the weight. So hey man, the kid's 10-0, he's the real deal.
Yeah, McCord's tempo, that's something that really stood out to me, is that he would, you know, work the hands and the feet together really well. And before Clemens would even start to change his strategy up or anything else, McCord would change his. He would go on the inside and really start working those knees into the body and in effective shots, you know. And before, you know, Clemens could kind of get ahead on that, he would back out on the outside again. So, you know, McCord really, really seasoned kickboxer, you know, Muay Thai competitor. Mm-hmm. And again, we're going to see huge, huge things out of him. You know, line fights, glory, you name it. But that being said, Jake Clemens, still the Valor Fights flyweight champion in mixed martial arts, and still a tremendous showing. I think Jacob's going to look back, and when McCord is in one of these huge, you know, promotions, glory and so forth, he's going to be like, yeah, I fought that kid. Yep. Yeah. And it was really awesome. So, and of course, big things for Jacob Clemens coming up in the future as well. So moving on, I want to go ahead. I want to send it over to Billy. Billy, you saw this co-main event, man. Of course, out of American Killer Bees, you fancy the Muay Thai game. Talk about it.
And it was definitely a great exhibit of Muay Thai from Walter. Jacob was definitely in there. I mean, it was a great fight. Like I said, it was a battle to the end. Like, the pace never slowed. They stayed in each other's face. Walter did land, I believe it was the third round, a couple spinning back kicks that looked like they might drop Jacob. But Jacob stayed in there. I mean, showed his chin durability, showed his overall toughness. But as far as technique goes, Walter was the better man that night. And I mean, it showed why he's 10-0.
Undoubtedly. All right, well, moving on, bout number 13, and of course, our main event of the evening. It was presented by Baldwin Cremation and Mortuary. Flyweight mixed martial arts, female mixed martial arts, if you will, as Megan Poe faced off against Christina Roadhouse Ricker. Ricker gets the unanimous decision victory, but what a battle it was. Good back and forth action, tough, everything that you would want in a WMMA bout or a main event anywhere in the United States, Tim.
Yeah, another really close fight. You know, depending on what you're looking for from the judges' eyes, it could have gone either way. Both ladies had their moments. I thought that Ricker's striking had tightened up a lot more. You know, that's been a part of her game that has been a work in progress, and I thought that she seemed a lot more composed and still a little awkward, but that's kind of, you know, sometimes that's a good thing, you know, but it seemed like she was just more tight and controlled with her striking this time. Megan Poe had a lot of good cage control, you know, and ultimately that game plan would, you know, it would work with some judges, didn't work with these judges. And Ricker evens her record up to 4-4. And, you know, I'd like to see her versus like a PETA or a Alana Arnett up next.
Yeah, I thought it was a great fight. You know, we worked with Megan a lot, on big shots. We knew that we're going to have a little bit of a reach advantage and so forth. Megan caught a shot. I don't know if it was the edge of the glove or whatever, but there right at the beginning, something cut her actual eyelid. So she had a big gash there in the actual eyelid. So when she closed her eye, you could see it. And then a little one there below. So that was probably in the first 45 seconds to a minute of the fight. So she kind of had to shake that off. She was kind of, there in the first round. It took her a second to kind of get going. As that first round closed out, the pace picked up, and then of course rounds 2 and 3 were absolute war. So again, props to Christina. She's someone that we all have a storied past with, as far as with her work in bar battles last year, and of course the headlining there and taking the title at the 50-50 fight night. So we've worked extensively with her, and so this was a little different facing off against her. There's always a ton of respect there. So we knew going in that it was going to be a great matchup, and we were, proud to represent like that. That being said, let's send it over to Billy. What did you think of the fight?
It was a great fight. Just like Tim said, Ricker's striking looked a lot more crisp before she kind of would throw looping punches and be a little wild with her strikes, but she looked a lot more clean and poised on her feet. I think overall, just I think she was able to absorb the energy of the crowd and all that more than Megan, and just use it to kind of give her the momentum to carry her through the fight. But overall, great fight from both competitors, and I definitely think Megan shouldn't hang her head because, I mean, Ricker is not, you know, it's not like she lost to a nobody. Ricker's a well-established amateur, and probably, honestly, before too long, would be looking to go pro.
Yeah, for sure. It was, a great icing on the cake of a tremendous show. And, you know, Tim, real quick, I'll give, you know, some closing moments about it. And then on top of that, we got to find out what these standings are, the picks panel, and how everything's going in that regard.
You know, again, just a blast working with Josh and those guys at the Shed. They're great hosts. We've got a great venue, great vibe, and we're excited to be back there August 17th. We'll do our late summer show. It got a little chilly there at the end of the night last weekend, but it wasn't unbearable by any means. It'll not be chilly, I'm sure, in August. So, you know, it'll be plenty hot, and we're excited to get back over there. And as for the picks, we didn't have anyone finish sub 500 this time, which is good. Everybody had a pretty good week, but there were 12 possible. Again, this is starting our second quarter, and so everybody's got a fresh slate here. And of course, our award brought to us by Tennessee Top Roller, who will catch up with them in the next couple weeks before their event they've got there on the 12th of May in Johnson City. But for this one, Billy Swanson enters into the picks panel on his first week and takes the lead with a pretty stellar a record of 10-2. 10-2 for Billy Swanson. And loses only on Winona and I want to say maybe on Randall Austin. And then Mark Laws at 9-3 had probably the best week in Mark's ever, even going back to the first quarter, probably the best week for him. And so he's comes out swinging very good, and he's right in the mix there. Also, Jeff Hobbs and Alan Poole, both 9-3 as well. So we've got a little log jam right underneath. Sawyer Rich bringing up the rear at 7-5, but not too far out. You know, we'll be right back to it next week. We've got Strikefest 4 coming up next weekend, May the 5th. So we'll be doing our second picks panel immediately for that. So we'll see how things shake out.
Right on. And of course, you mentioned before, we'll be back there at the Shed in August to do more of the same of it that we saw at Valor Fights 49. So excited about that. And with that being said, let's move on. We're moving on to a little bit more news here. This time we'll head over to some national news. And, of course, a big upcoming event this Saturday, Bellator 198, goes down this Saturday night, April 28th, live from the Allstate Arena in Rosemont, Illinois. And, of course, that will be broadcast live on the Paramount Network. And, of course, the big main event, it features the two legends, Fedor Emelianenko taking on Frank Mir. Tim, what do you think about this fight?
Man, it's, you know, this is kind of a one fight card. You know, there's some names on there that will get recognition, but you know, Bellator is well aware that the 90% of the people will be tuning in to see this heavyweight battle, Fedor Emelianenko and Frank Mir. I'm excited for it. You know, I've got a, I could see either guy landing and, you know, dropping the other guy. You know, it could be quick, but I think honestly, I'm going to go with Frank Mir here. I just think he's the more well-rounded guy. He's, more relevant lately. And, you know, I think even if he doesn't land, if he doesn't get clipped in those early exchanges in the pocket, I think he could possibly submit him too, you know?
Yeah. You know, Fedor historically is my favorite fighter, you know, through the years. And, you know, every time that I have been in attendance, I got to watch Fedor fight two times. Fedor has lost dramatically both times, and I blame myself sometimes, but it, you know, it was, Of course, the loss to Bigfoot and then the loss to Dan Henderson. So, you know, so this one going in, you know, when I look at this matchup, I see Fedor being undersized as usual in the heavyweight division. I think he should have been a light heavyweight a long time ago. But I see him being undersized, and I see Frank Mir, you know, having, you know, the grappling skills. He has great top pressure, and that's something that, you know, Fedor, of course, against Bigfoot, he fell prey to, you know. And I think that if Frank Mir doesn't get off on the feet with him, I think he's going to get him on the ground. And if he doesn't, I will be delighted. I will be delightfully surprised because I am a huge Fedor fan. Billy, man, you're big old heavyweight. Talk about these two big old heavyweights.
Oh, man, dude, that is going to be a show. I mean, definitely another. I mean, you can't count Frank out on his feet, though, because I remember, I think it was Bigfoot that he hit with like it was a jab left hook and knocked him out like in like 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Back in UFC. So, I mean, I think honestly, I mean, it's either a fight that is going to be finished in the first or second round. Like, I don't think it goes distant. And it's definitely, I think if it goes ground, Frank has it all day. If it stays on the feet, I think Fedor is going to do what he always does and smash somebody.
Yeah. And of course, this tournament is just so diverse. You know, it has every kind of genre, age, and era of fighter in it. You know, from Chael Sonnen to Mitrione to, you know, I mean, you name it. It makes it intriguing and interesting. So we're going to get to see some dream matches for sure, and this is one of those. On down the card, Emmanuel Sanchez taking on Sam Cecilia. Rafael Lovato Jr. taking on Gerald Harris, who steps in last minute in place of John Salter. Neiman Gracie versus Javier Torres, and of course, the debut, mixed martial arts debut of Dylan Danis. He takes on Kyle Walker. Tim, what do you think?
I mean, like I said, you know, it's a pretty, as far as like, you know, quality goes and close matches, it's a one fight show, but it can be because it's a big fight at the top. And, you know, Sanchez and Cecilio will probably be exciting while it lasts. I was much more excited to see Lovato and Salter. However, Gerald Harris is tough. You know, I mean, he's still going to be, I mean, he's taking it on 2-3 days notice. So who knows, but you know, that fight's a little underwhelming still, I think. Yeah. Neiman Gracie, of course, is in a showcase, and then Dylan Danis is fighting a guy that's under 500. So they definitely want him to do well. But, you know, hey, it's like I said, the top of the card is all that really matters, and I'm sure they will have a great view rate anyway.
Mark, where's the sleeper for you? What's the one that's going to open a lot of eyes?
Oh, man, I'm still on that main event, brother. It's you know, I think it's Mir's spot to lose, essentially, to Fedor. His jiu-jitsu is probably a hair better and is probably going to get the submission if he can't get it on the feet. But sort of that, I don't know a lot about the undercard yet. I'm still waiting to look at that and see what stands out to me. But, yeah, the main event's the shit. The whole tournament's the shit.
Yeah. Well, again, it goes down this Saturday night, and it's going to be live on the Paramount Network. Tim, have you watched the Paramount Network before? I don't have cable anymore.
I don't watch it except for when Bellator's on. I don't know anything else on there.
Gotcha. Liar. He has a subscription. Don't let him lie.
I'm going to start watching my Bellator on CMT.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, that's it for this week's news, which means it is time to move on to this week's Valor Hour Q&A. And, of course, Tim, are you ready?
Yep.
All right, we got a good one. First off, how would you grade the V49 main event on a scale of 1 to 10? And will we see more women fighting in Valor main events?
Yeah, of course, I'm sure we'll see more women fighting in main events. I will grade that a solid 8. I thought it was, you know, it was competitive. It was close. Obviously, you know, to get a 10, they're going to have to kill each other in there and,
yep,
and you know, just
cut some blood,
burn the place down. But I would give it a solid 8.
Okay, fair enough. When that same thought, who would you like to see Christina Ricker fight next after her big win over Megan Poe?
Oh, yay. I already answered it, kind of. Yeah, I think Pauline Macias or Alana Arnett would both be very good. You know, off the top of my head, I think those would be two good matches.
Yeah, undoubtedly, for sure. Whose stock raised the most with their performance at
45? Ooh-wee. Let's say, man, that's a tough one. I'm going to say, oh, wow. You know, at the top of the card, I'd say, you know, there. I wouldn't really give just a massive bump up to anyone. I'm going to say Logan Crowley. I'm going to say that for a guy that's just still kind of starting to ignite here and start to take off, you know, he had another exciting performance with two big showings in less than 6 weeks. And so I want to say Logan Crowley.
Who do you think we'll see him facing off with next? So you got any ideas?
That's a good question. You know, he obviously didn't have a hard time making 55. So, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing potentially something like him and Ivan Mendez. They're both 2-0.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, moving on. What's next for Walter McCord?
Well, you know, he's a busy guy. They keep him, you know, to have as many fights as he does already at 18 years old, you have to stay busy. So he's got a lot of fights booked coming up. He'll probably be defending that title in the fall, September, October. I'm not exactly sure against two. I'm open to suggestions if y'all can think of anybody that can hang with that guy.
Fair enough. And finally, it was announced that Tough is doing a season for heavyweights and women's 145ers. Are there any Valor vets you'd like to see on this show?
Yeah, of course. You know, right on the top of my head, obviously, if Billy had already gotten up there and gotten three fights in, he'd be an obvious choice. But Chandler Cole has, and I think he's a guy that definitely needs to go out there and see what he can do. I think he's got a great persona. He's not going to be camera shy, and I think he'll have a personality that they will like. Let's see, who else? Females, you know, I don't know if Amy Coleman would fit the bill or not, since she's already an Invicta, but I think that she would be great to go out there. Annie DiCrescente as well. You know, that's a couple right off the top of the head. You know, we're talking earlier, like Shanna Young would probably be great, but at 45 is probably heavier than they would want her to be, but I think she could still compete.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, you know, her fight with Amy Coleman, you know, way back there was just one of the all-time greats in Valor fights.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that does it for another Valor Hour Q&A segment. Remember, send in your questions, and Tim will be happy to answer each of those right here on the air each week. With that being said, it is time to move on to the main event this week. It is Valor Hour main event time. And this week, it's all about the discussion, and the topic is judging criteria. What scores, what doesn't, and what constitutes dominance in a mixed martial arts bout, particularly a contemporary mixed martial arts bout, because you know that the scoring has evolved throughout the year. Now, Tim, I'm going to send it over to you for a few words on what you like to see as far as in a fight, and what is the recipe for success in regards to scoring?
You know, I mean, like we always say, it is the age-old question, and I think that as we have evolved, if you will, over the past several years, you've started seeing, you know, it used to be the takedown was just for sure. If you get the takedown, then, you know, and you can ride on top, then you're going to win the fight. But you started seeing more and more guys get the nod from the bottom because they're working on the bottom and they're not giving so much credit to the takedown if there isn't effective damage and being done with it. They tell the judges when they're doing their training and getting certified and whatnot, that they're to judge based on damage. Am I there?
Yeah, I went off.
Sorry. You know, they're instructed to judge on damage, then dominance, and then aggression in that order. So the damage is supposed to be the number one factor that they judge on. If that were equal, then they would move on to dominance, such as positional dominance. And if that were even, they would move on to aggression. Who is actively trying to end the fight more? That's only if the first two criteria are even, you know, and so you know, I see that isn't always followed, and it's hard to break that mindset. I think because for so many years
the takedown was just enough to get it done. And so I can see how it can be frustrating on both sides. Obviously, from a promoter standpoint, I want exciting fights. I want guys to fight to finish, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's something that, you know, we have lost. We have won fights often that, you know, at sometimes when we assume we, you know, like that maybe we didn't know we were going to win. And then we've lost fights that we thought that for sure we should have won. You know, I think that there is a, you know, with judging there, you know, because of the changes, I think that it can be difficult sometimes to get a uniform judging panel, you know, and, you know, you know, everybody kind of sees things differently. They view things differently. I know as a coach, you know, we train for damage, particularly since the change in the ABC's requirements and standards. We do train for damage. You know, we definitely want to have control because, you know, positional control does often lead to damage. But without actually, you know, implementing that damage, once you have the control, then again, just as you said, it takes things back down a notch. It takes it to where, you know, for instance, if I'm holding you against the cage and you're beating me to death with punches and elbows, you know, I'm controlling the position because you can't leave, but you're beating me up. So you're damaging. So you're in control of that fight, in my estimation, if you know, my interpretation of the rules. Billy, your thoughts?
My thoughts are just as you said. I mean, I believe the person who is landing more damage and is actively in there fighting to and fighting to finish the fight should be the winner. Just because you get a takedown does not mean that you're winning the fight. I mean, like I said, it doesn't work that way. If it was a wrestling match, then yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, but it's not a wrestling match. I mean, I've wrestled collegiately in college, but I don't use my takedowns to take somebody down and hug them. I use my takedowns to either take them down and then use my jiu-jitsu and pass the guard and ground and pound or submit them. I think that definitely, I mean, when you look at it in that aspect, if somebody just used the takedown to win the fight, I mean, it'd be the same aspect as what people complain about Floyd Mayweather style in boxing. You would be using the rule system, and you found a way to, you know, cheat the system and guide by the rules to win a fight that's not really you winning.
As far as the change in the criteria, I think that had a lot to do with it. I think there were a lot of fights, just like way back. If you look way back when Boss Rutten defeated Kevin Randleman for the UFC title, and a lot of people said that's what changed the scoring system in you know, from a jiu-jitsu based scoring to more of a wrestling scoring. So, you know, after that fight, because Randleman spent all that time on top, ground and pounding, he ends up losing the fight. That made him go back to the drawing board, and so. So for many years after that, you see, you know, two fighters fighting. The man on his feet is, you know, landing big shots, and he's doing a majority of the damage. And then the other guy lands a big takedown at the end of the round. That seals the round, and so that wrestler wins. And so I think that, like you mentioned, a lot of people, you know, started to see the fights kind of going the other way, and so they had to kind of level it out. And in my estimation, the damage does promote the fighters to have the most exciting fight possible, because obviously you are out there trying to win. Mark. What do you think? How much should a takedown score in a fight, in a mixed martial arts fight, in which the striking is even on the feet?
Well, the striking is even on the feet. You know, I mean, takedowns are going to definitely score points. I'm actually an advocate against a lot of damage, really, because I feel like damage can be corrected. However, I feel like aggression can't be. I feel like if you're aggressive and trying to stop the fight at every chance you get, I think that outweighs damage, really. I mean, you know, I mean, how many times have you seen guys be cut really bad and I go in there, stop the bleeding, those guys come out and win, you know? I mean, it happens all the time. It's, you know, damage in the short term, I can see it going to a judge's scorecard, but in the long run, it's, you know, it's going to happen. It's a freaking fist fight, man. I mean, people are beating the shit out of one another. Well, so, you know, takedowns are going to be weighed as something, especially in the eyes of a lot of these old school judges. And unfortunately, we see a lot of those in our realm.
Well, what exactly is damage, though? Because you're thinking, if you're thinking cuts are a little bit different. You know, cuts are kind of an anomaly. A lot of times they were trying to get rid of elbows because they felt like that cuts kind of prevented the fight from happening, meaning you might get cut, but you have the ability to continue on a fight. If it was in the street, you would continue to fight whether you're cut or not, but you just can't in an organized sport, you can't have blood everywhere, you know? And
I look at damage as trying to end the fight, you know, putting together combinations, putting together ground and pound, you know, you're aiming to win the fight. And, you know, if blood happens to happen, swelling happens to happen, you know, it's all treatable, you know, but it doesn't take away from who's trying to actually win the fight either. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm probably not the one to ask for this because I see it both sides.
And I think it also needs to be, you know, as they say, it needs to be effective. It needs to still be calculated. You can't just be on your back flailing about. But if you're calculated Absolutely. And you're picking your shots and you're actually have somewhat of a composed game plan as to what you're trying to do down there to cause the damage while the guy's on top of you hugging you, not throwing anything. You know, at what point do you – Well, where do you draw the line as to where the damage or let's say the attacks being thrown from the guy on the bottom begins to overcome the position of the guy that got the takedown?
I think by the criteria that is presented by ABC now, it's any. In other words, you can take the takedown itself. And if I pick you up over my head and I power slam you down, well, that's impact. That's damage. That's almost like a punch, like a good hard punch. But if you just, you know, jack trip me down and we tumble to the ground and I'm on bottom and you lay there holding me and I drill you in the head with elbows and punches nonstop and you lay there for a minute and all I'm doing is pop, 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 I'm winning that fight.
But it's just being on top enough of the dominant position.
That position holds no bearing. What does it matter if you're on your back, you're on your feet, or whatever? If somebody's hitting you, it doesn't matter.
That's the problem of it not being more of a mixed martial arts rule set as to somebody coming from a strength has came in and tried to force their opinion on it. They've said, hey, you know, if you're on top, hey, you're winning that battle. I mean, that the jiu-jitsu side of that is, hey, I could submit you from bottom just because I'm in my guard doesn't mean anything.
Like, well, I think it's also important to say that there's a complete difference between what the judges see and what, like, the lay public see, the non-hardcore fans see. They think if a person's on top, they're automatically winning. You know, whether or not they can get triangle from the submission, armbar from the submission, anything, they see the person on top, whether they're imposing damage or not, they see that as the more imposing person.
I think that maybe you look at it and you can say, if you take me down or I take you down and I'm on top of you, okay, I'm automatically, because of gravity, I'm going to have the advantage in the punching power. In other words, not only do I have the effectiveness of my punch, the muscles, but I've also got gravity working with me to punch down, as opposed to the guy on bottom who has gravity working against him. So typically speaking, the man on bottom is not going to be able to throw as hard of shots as the man on top. So, but at the same time, if you're not throwing any shots at all on top, then you're not winning the fight. How can you be winning the fight by any standard of, you know, damage?
Or if you're getting beat on your feet and you just get a takedown and land in guard and then wind right back up on your feet, start getting beat on your feet again and then shoot another takedown and the same occurrence keeps repeating.
But is there no advantage to having the takedown? Is there no advantage to having the takedown?
Yeah, but you've got to do something with the takedown. Either, I mean, if you never pass the guard or if you never land damaging shots or do anything with the takedown, and the takedown is more of a desperation than saving your ass from being asleep. Then,
however, both of y'all will agree, it takes a huge amount of energy to get back up to your feet after a takedown, whether you're either guy.
But I mean, it also takes a huge amount of energy to hold somebody down.
Absolutely.
Sure.
The takedown should be seen as like an avenue to advance to either a very dominant position to finish via submission. Absolutely. Or to inflict maximum damage from a top position, but not just to hold that, you know.
Look at it from a different perspective. Look at it, okay, if I'm on the feet, okay, so the takedown is one man saying, okay, we're on the striking range. I'm going to change the range of where we're fighting. We're going to go to the ground and we're going to fight on the ground. So I'm in control because I'm making that choice. But in that same thought process, if you shoot and I sprawl your takedown and sling you off, shouldn't I score? Because now I'm preventing you from putting me on the ground, and I'm keeping it in the striking range.
Yes.
So with the person who defends the takedown, then it's just pure. I think that.
Or what if you pull guard? What if you pull guard? Do you not get offense for that?
No, I mean, no. But I think. But I tell you what, if I pulled guard and I upkicked you in the mouth five times, or I grabbed you and put you in an arm bar and battled you, or I hammer fisted you and you didn't do a single thing, would the judges probably give it to me? No, probably not. But should they? I mean, if you're really judging for the criteria, maybe, you know, but I think that if you're thinking, you know, putting someone in a range, I mean, you've got to put him there and have a reason to put him there. You got to do something with it. You know, it's like pulling your car into drive.
We know you're not pulling guard. We've all seen your left hook before.
Oh, my. I'll tell you.
Oh, Lord.
JJF.
He done brought it up, didn't he? He done brought it up, didn't he?
Ooh. The cobwebs from the graveyard are coming.
It's old news, brother. That's 10 years. That's 10 years old. You know, I think the biggest thing is I think these fighters go out and they train hard. And I think that I think now, because things are kind of wishy-washy, you've got ABC that's judging with this criteria, hence, you know, UMAF and ISK doing the same thing. But maybe not, you know, maybe, you know, some of the judges may not necessarily you know, up to speed with everything. I think maybe making sure that everything is uniform. I mean, you're going to win fights and you're going to lose fights, and nobody's ever going to be perfect. I think the biggest and most important thing is if things are uniform, so that when the fighters are training and have a game plan, they at least want to know that there's a chance that they can win based on this criteria. And I think that's
I have a completely different point of view. I think just don't leave it in the fucking hands of these incompetent judges. Then you don't have shit to worry about.
But that's not – but you can't say that, though, because at a high level, the fights are so long. They would have to be an hour and a half long, some of these fights, yeah, for their –
You know as well as I do, I mean, judges are discretionary as much as fighters are. I mean, you know, you don't know what you're
– It's hard because you don't want to have conflicts of interest, but for anybody that – has actually competed and have a grasp on, you know, what's really going on in there, it's almost impossible to not have some sort of conceived conflict somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. And it, or a biased opinion. Yeah. I think that kind of, you know, plays into it. And it, you know, I think that over time, it's going to get better and better. I think the biggest thing is particularly as in amateurs, if you're talking about it, if it's an amateur fight, you win one or you lose one, it's not going to really, you know, that record doesn't stay with you for very long. It's just a matter of being able to improve and stuff. But when you're talking about the professionals, you're looking into moving on to big paydays and things like that, to where if you lose, you lose a couple thousand dollars or more. Then it gets to be serious business, you know? And so, you know, I agree with you, Mark, in the idea that, yeah, we need to go out there and finish fights. If you finish them, you don't have to worry about it. But at the same time, there are going to be some fights that just aren't going to be finished. But it's not going to be conceivable that you go into the fight and you go, well, I'm just going to throw any sort of strategy out of the window and just fight and hope that I put this guy away. Because if you do that, you're going to lose, a certain percentage of your fights. You know, you've got to have some sort of game plan that is based on a scoring and winning round after round. And you know, and of course people have always talked about, you know, what if it was a scoring system that wasn't round to round? What if it was an overall scoring system that scores the whole fight? You know, so many different viewpoints and so forth. Real quick, Tim, any final kind of thoughts on this, mindset and so forth?
I wish there was a definitive answer for, you know, how to
you know, get everybody on the same page, but there really just isn't. All I could really suggest is have some sort of, you know, ever so often some sort of judge's review, or, you know, some sort of someone, there's some oversight of sorts that, you know, where they go back and be like, okay, can you explain this, this, and this? And, you know, as long as they have a reasonable explanation, then, you know, they continue to work. And if you have so many discrepancies that you can't really account for, you go back into a shadow position where you're, you know, you've got to show that you are doing the right things before you're put back in those spots.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, it can fall into, this is something I've seen before as well, is that if you're not careful, you can be glamored firstly by a fighter, meaning the fighter may not be doing anything, mm-hmm. but he looks really good at what he's doing. Yep. You know, like when he lands his shots, it looks like a movie, you know, like they turn on their punches, right. And they just look good, you know? And so you may tend to look at that and go, man, he's winning that fight. Sugar Ray Leonard did it over and over again. You know, it was him and Marvin Hagler, that fight. Those guys, they had a huge battle as to who won that fight because Sugar Ray glamored those judges. And, of course, if you're a hometown fighter. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's just aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, and then also if you're a hometown fighter and you're getting the cheers, you know, then when they see something happen, they may inadvertently not think about it. But if you're hearing the whole crowd erupt, you hear a big bang, then automatically you're going to be, that's the one thing that stands out, you know, in the fight, you know, and then the round and stuff. So, you know, I think that, you know, of course, judges being aware and so forth. I mean, I'm as guilty as anybody else, man. I can be glamored. You know, I'm not a judge, but I can certainly be glamored by an aesthetically pleasing fighter, you know. And I felt that Caleb Frank and Lee Polk back at Strikefest 3, last Strikefest.
Yeah.
It was – I thought that it was a very competitive fight. But I watched it from the start, and I was like, Caleb Frank has a very aesthetically pleasing look about the way he fights. His style, looks correct, very correct, and he's very perpetual motion, you know, Mike Tyson-ish, if you will. And I knew from the start, I was like, if this is the way this fight goes, it looks very, very close. If you're just looking at shot for shot, it's going to be very, very hard to call. But I knew watching it, the way Caleb Frank was moving around, that if those judges are captured by that, then he's going to win that fight unanimous. You know what I mean?
And like, for my world, Casey, for my world, it's crazy because I see people being hurt in there, and I have to actually think about what I'm doing because I think my sole presence being out there can impact people being there as being a privilege. And it's not always the case. You know, I'm there in both corners. I actually think about the stuff before I go in and treat someone that even my being in influences the. That's a unique situation.
Yeah, for sure. Well, gentlemen, any last words from anybody? If not, I'm going to wrap up this segment. I think there's a lot of good discussion, and you know, I really appreciate everybody's insight.
Last thing I got to say is it's a lot easier to judge a fight looking back on it from the video from over top of the cage as to sitting down beside the cage. Like when you can watch it on camera and see every shot that's landed as to, you know, trying to look through the side of the cage, it can also, just like you said, it's a lot easier to glamour someone and as to being able to rewind it on video and seeing like a combo like Cowboy Carone's famous for, that 5-punch combo knockout. It's a lot easier to rewind that and see it on camera as to see it in person.
Yeah.
And one more time, did you say Cowboy Carone?
I said something from Saudi Daisy. That's
right. and you're right. You know, Billy, you brought up a good point there too, because when you're talking about, you know, you've got three judges, and those judges aren't sitting together. They're sitting in three different portions of that around that cage, different areas. So they're seeing from their perspective a completely different fight. You know, so in other words, one fighter, you know, you may have both fighters with their backs to one judge during an exchange in which they might be right in front of another judge. And so a judge, and that's why you get that scoring difference, because not only do you have two, you know, three different kind of thought processes with each one of those judges, but you're getting also, you know, a different viewpoint, if you will. So you're 100% correct there. And that's definitely something to think about. And like I said, you know, I think it's always good to kind of bring it up and discuss it. And, you know, sometimes no matter how much we work on it, we're going to have disappointments, and we're also going to have surprises where we're like, man, I don't know, we really deserved that one, but we're going to take it anyway. You know, so I think that happens sometimes, and that's just part of the way things go. With that being said, that does it for this week's main event, as well as another episode of the Valor Hour. Huge thanks to our great lineup of guests for your tremendous insight and discussion. I'm talking to you, Big Sexy, and to you, Mark Laws. Thank you so much, as always. Remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts as well as Stitcher, and please share this broadcast. We return right here next week as we continue our discussion on the biggest combat sports news from across the globe. And, of course, a shout-out to Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl, as always, for their tremendous support. For myself, Casey Oxendine, and Valor Fights President Tim Loy, this has been the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit ValorFights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
I know there's been so much talk about what happened with the controversy with Ricky Simone. We're going to get to that. But to me, like, my number one takeaway from all this weekend is just the great performance that Kevin Lee put out on Saturday night in Atlantic City.
I think that's definitely the biggest takeaway, especially from a positive point of view, because Kevin Lee went out and he was facing a guy in Edson Barboza who has kind of made a career out of being the ultimate gatekeeper in the UFC, which is like, this guy is clearly a top 6-7 lightweight. And when he's fighting, he's a top 4, top 3 type lightweight, one of the best stand-up fighters in the game. And there's a clear line between the guys he beats and the guy he loses to, and the guys he loses to go on to challenge for a lightweight championship. So that's why this was an important fight for Kevin Lee. And man, he really aced this. Obviously, it was one of those things where when he showed up to class, he was a bit tardy, weighing in at 157 pounds. That is obviously a bit of a blip on his entire performance.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.